What do COVID spikes mean for jobless claims? From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Just as some businesses were reopening, spikes in COVID cases are causing them to close again and others to slow down reopening plans. What's that going to mean for jobless claims and the outlook for companies? Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors, joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we've got these unfortunate COVID spikes and some states reclosing down in some cases. How do you think that is going to affect the jobless claims we're going to see tomorrow?
Well, I think that the jobless claims, which are a trailing number, are going to be a key focal point for the market. The market wants to know how employment is faring. Are people getting back to work? How does the economy look going forward? That increased spike in COVID cases also is going to concern the market because it means that states are probably slowing their reopening. And that means we're going to slow our return to normalcy.
Do you think we will see more layoffs because of, you know, states sort of slightly closing down again? Or do you think companies are just going to ride it out and say, look, we just rehired these people, let's just keep them on for a while longer, see how it goes?
It's really too soon to tell, but a key indicator is going to be earnings reports. We're going to start hearing from company management teams about how they're handling COVID and how they see the strategy for their businesses going forward. I think that's what the market will focus on, trying to get a sense of how companies are planning to get through this.
All right, Susan Schmidt, thank you as always. President Trump kicked off a new pressure campaign yesterday to convince state and local officials to open schools back up in the fall and give working parents some relief. The decision of whether to keep schools and universities open during the pandemic has been mostly a local decision up to this point, and how to reopen them safely is still something education and health officials are sorting out. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams joins me live now from Washington with more on this. Kimberly, what's behind the Trump administration's push here?
Well, basically, they're arguing that it's worse for kids to stay at home and try remote learning when compared to the overall risk of them getting very sick or even dying from diseases caused by COVID-19. The American Academy of Pediatrics, which joined Trump's announcement yesterday, is also warning about what this is doing to kids' mental health and social skills to be out of school for so long. On top of that, there's the economic argument, which you mentioned, that as long as kids can't go to school, it's going to be hard, if not impossible, for their caregivers to work, and that will be a continuing drag on any economic recovery.
With, you know, these sharp increases in COVID-19 cases we're seeing across the country, there's clearly, you know, a health risk if schools open too early, but what are the costs associated with returning kids to school?
I spoke about this earlier today with Lily Eccleson Garcia. She's president of the National Education Association. She talked about extra teachers and nurses needed to have good social distancing, plus money for PPE, disinfectants, and remote learning support. And schools across the country could need an extra $200 billion to safely reopen.
We can't do this out of the pockets of underpaid teachers at a time, by the way, when school budgets are being slashed because our revenue source, the tax dollars, the tax base, has fallen off a cliff.
Eccleson is frustrated by President Trump's push to reopen, partly because right now there's not money attached to it.
Marketplace's Kimberly Adams, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
Earlier this hour, the Supreme Court handed down two decisions. In one, the court said the Trump administration can widen exemptions for employers who don't want to cover contraception on religious or moral grounds. In a second decision, the Supreme Court ruled employment discrimination laws did not apply to religious institutions when it comes to certain jobs, writing that under the First Amendment, courts are bound to stay out of employment disputes involving those holding certain important positions with churches and other religious institutions. Stay tuned. There'll be a lot more coverage on that today. COVID misinformation may be a multi-million dollar business online. Pushers of conspiracy theories and false information make money from ads served on their sites. Marketplace's Nova Sappho has more.
The UK-based Global Disinformation Index estimates that English-language websites trafficking in COVID-19 misinformation will make some $25 million from digital advertising this year. The money reportedly comes from major brands such as Canon, L'Oreal, and Johnson & Johnson. The group says the websites in question publish misinformation, such as conspiracy theories about the origins of the novel coronavirus and stories about unproven and downright dangerous treatments. The sites make money when ads, powered by tech giants such as Google and Amazon, inadvertently populate next to the content in question because it generates user traffic. Google called the report flawed and the revenue calculations not realistic. A spokesperson said Google is taking an aggressive approach to content that makes harmful claims about COVID-19. I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
About 20% of the day camps across the country are closed this summer, and a lot of the ones that are open are starting later and taking fewer kids. That is particularly hard on low-income and single parents, Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
To say that summer camp is important to Nicole Musial is an understatement.
It literally, like, saved my family.
She's a pediatric nurse, so she can't work from home. And she's also a single mom, so there's no one else to take care of her 5-year-old and 9-year-old.
I have to work. Like, I love my job, and I can't do my job without camp.
This is a huge issue if we think about the economic costs of the pandemic and the mental health costs as well.
Emily Oster is a health economist at Brown University. She says kids need to be around other kids, and parents need somewhere to send them.
In order to start to reopen, to kind of get back to work, we need people to not also be full-time parenting. And I personally think that camp is a very good way to try to do this.
A good way, but still not easy in a pandemic. Nicole Musial does feel like the Greater Philadelphia YMCA camp, where she sends her kids, has figured it out.
They wash their hands constantly. Like, you know, they're not allowed to touch each other. They have a certain amount of kids per counselors. And it's like, they're really doing everything they can.
But a lot of parents are still wondering if there will be camp for their kids this summer. Angela Tyndall normally sends her 8-year-old daughter to a free day camp that's funded by New York City. But as of yesterday, she still hadn't heard whether it'll be opening. So far, her daughter has mostly just been at home.
It saddens me that, you know, she's in a house. How much fun can me and her really have? Like, she wants to play with her peers.
Tyndall's daughter may now have a chance later this summer. Just last week, the city said it will fund some summer programs for kids. But Tyndall still has no details, and she isn't sure yet if she'll feel comfortable sending her daughter.
I want to know, how are they going to keep them safe? You know, what's the precautions? What's the safety measures they're going to take?
Camp directors now have just days to figure all that out. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
The Marketplace Morning Report is interested in how inequality can play out within families, in a household or among generations of the same family. Did the pre-COVID economy fail some members of your family while rewarding others? We would love to hear from you. You can email us. You can use the address morningreport@marketplace.org. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.